own son. He's like in witness protection. No address, no number that works anymore.
He's a suspect.
In the murder?
A woman with a problem.
You ain't feeling so good.
I felt worse.
Yeah, but you felt a whole lot better before, haven't you?
I'm done with that.
Really?
A woman with a past. And a man.
Another cop. He was my best friend. He was doing something that he shouldn't have. And I looked the other way.
With a reputation.
I used to call him the Terminator. Like the movie?
What would you say?
That's violation of my parole.
Not if you inform your parole officer and get approval. I'm your parole officer.
This is Bernice. Her son's gotten into some mess on the other side.
It's not my world.
There was this big bust in Nogales and the snakeheads get hauled in. And Rodney's still in TJ with this new girlfriend. So that's who gets snatched by the Chinos.
Unless they took $1 million of your money. You got an army to get it back. I will forget about those boys.
What is it you want to buy?
An African-American male by the name of Rodney Stokes.
We're more interested in other kind of travel.
Other?
Like crossing the border illegally.
They have an American.
So?
They're cutting pieces off of him every day. Pretty soon there'll be nothing left.
What would you do?
Hey, don't
you push me, Morenita. How far would you go?
Why you hang with me?
For a friend.
People always say we could go for sisters.
Gopher Sisters is a story of two women who were so tight when they were friends back in high school that they could go for sisters. You know, they were never kind of inseparable, knew each other's business a little bit too well, maybe. And then they're, after they graduate from high school, they're separated for 20 years and then are reunited when one is assigned to be the parole officer for the other, who's just gotten out of jail and is fighting a drug habit. So, and then it gets into a kind of road movie detective story where the son of the woman who is the parole officer has been kidnapped down in Mexico, and they have to enlist the aid of this ex-LAPD detective played by Edward Olmos and go into unknown worlds together. So there's kind of a plot drama and then a character drama going on parallel to each other.
You know, one of the things as I was watching it that I picked out is maybe a theme of hardships can reconnect us to people that we haven't seen in a while or have been disconnected with in some way.
Yeah, and I think also the way that people can pull together during hardship and maybe discover something about each other. Cultures can really keep us apart. And, I think certainly people who went through World War II together, talk about that sense of pulling together and being in the same trench with somebody they never would have met, before. And these are people who used to know each other, but because they now have to rely on each other, they're kind of brought back to who that person was and who they were when they were with that other person.
As I was watching, I was really struck by the cast. I mean, Lisa Gay Hamilton, Yolanda Ross, and Edward James Olmos really blend together very well. We have a feeling that they've kind of known each other, as you were saying, the whole concept of the title, and it feels very lived in. And I wanted to ask you, is that a credit to them as actors? Is that a credit to you as a director? Is it part of the whole process and how you bring them together and get them into that space?
Well, some of it is that it's although there is a plot to the movie, it's not plot driven. So there is time for the audience to kind of hang with the characters as they hang with each other. And as these two old friends get to know each other again and see where the others have gone maybe off the track in their personal lives and then meet this new guy, this ex-detective who's going blind at the same time that he's he's lost his badge and his pension, and you know, is in kind of serious need of some personal redemption. You get to actually spend some time with them, you know, some hangout time as they're trying to get to the bottom of this mystery. And then, you know, we were very lucky and we got some incredible actors along the way, you know, Harold Perrineau and Isaiah Washington and Hector Elizondo and Vanessa Martinez and just a bunch of really, really good, you know, actors who we got to come in to be the people they meet on their journey to work for a day.
Did you shoot at the border crossing?
Yeah, we actually, this is a low budget movie, so we negotiated with the INS and Homeland Security for about a week, and they said, oh, sure, you can, you know, put one of your camera operators up on this bridge and show the traffic going through the tolls and, you know, the customs line. And he got up there, and he had just gotten focus with his camera on a tripod when yet another agency swept him away and almost put him in jail. So we got 7 seconds of what we needed of cars going into the thing. And then we staged the rest of it actually in a car wash where there were very similar drive-through with a little roof, concrete, you know, things, which is, you know, basically what movies are, is this, you know, creating this illusion with what you have at hand and what you can afford.
But we did
shoot in Mexico, so we did eventually cross the border and shoot some down there.
That was the thing I was going to ask. I mean, obviously, with border crossings, how difficult was it to get the clearances to do that?
Yeah, the border crossing itself, you can't really take pictures of these days. The main problem we had in Mexico, even though the authorities in Tijuana and Mexicali were enormously supportive and we had a great Mexican crew down there, was that we had a scene where there's a gun involved, and you just can't bring even fake guns legally from one country to the other. So we had to get a guy who was a police movie attaché to come up from Mexico City with a fake handgun so we could use it in Tijuana. And they only had a, you know, it kind of limited us in the choice of weapons that we could use, so that, because we had to have an identical one north of the border, and they only had about 6 models, and some of them didn't work for the story at all. So, you know, we couldn't just say, oh, this character would carry this kind of gun. We had to say, well, what kind of gun is available in Mexico City from this one office that would make sense in the story?
It's interesting talking about the challenge that you had there, and I was going to ask, is when you look at the biggest challenges and opportunities you see today doing the work that you do, how has it changed maybe even over the past 10 or maybe even 20 years back?
I think it is getting easier and easier to make a movie. The technology of digital film, you know, is you're shooting, you're not actually exposing film and having to develop it and throw, you know, 10 out of every 11 shots away because you're editing it down to 2 hours. Now, you know, you shoot digitally, and if you know it's no good, you can just erase it and shoot over it. That saves a lot of money, and the equipment's lighter and cheaper to rent and or own. But finally, there's only, you know, so many theaters that show non-Hollywood movies. There's only a few distributors left. So it's harder to get that movie seen after you make it, a lot harder. And there's still only 52 weeks in the year. So what you have is about 100 times more competition than when we started out in the 80s, and fewer screens that will actually show those movies when they're done.
You've been involved in independent film for over 30 years. In the state today, obviously, with fewer theaters, do you see any opportunity with video on demand or any other delivery method that makes it possible for filmmakers, you know, from the economic standpoint, for someone like you to do what you do?
Yeah, I think the potential is there. It hasn't been realized yet. The ideal, and I think the music business is going to be a little bit ahead of us on this, in that as the you know, the label system broke down in music, you had, you know, somewhat known bands who pretty much sell their stuff directly. They sell it at the door when they do a concert, or they'll have a website and you can, you know, download the album from them or download individual songs from them. And there's not a middleman involved. Occasionally, if there is, it's a digital middleman that doesn't take that, certainly not as much as a label used to take. What we can't do that they can do is we can't really go and do a live performance. And many bands make their livings now. They send their music out for almost free, that's already been recorded, and it's really just advertising for their live shows, and that's where they make their real money. There's not an equivalent to that. You know, George Clooney's not going to go and do a live appearance, you know, based on a movie that he's giving away for free online. So we're still figuring out how to get the money back from the viewer. And one of the difficulties, of course, is that a lot of young viewers have gotten used to seeing their stuff for free, whether it's pirated or not. Somehow they saw it and they didn't pay for it. And so there's a mindset of why should I be paying this that doesn't really include the answer, which is so the actors and crew can make a living and the filmmaker can get to make a second movie.
In the funding aspect, I mean, when you started, there were small independent distributors, there were small independent financiers, things like that. It seems that a lot of that has gone away. And we've seen recently in the past few years a lot of crowdfunding where filmmakers will go and say, hey, give me $50, $100 or whatever. Does that seem to be something that you think may have a future? Is it something that you may end up going to?
It's going to be pretty rare when you see – I know Paul Schrader did one recently where they crowdfunded, and I think they had a couple $100,000 to make it, and they topped it off with their own money. But it's going to be pretty rare when you see a movie that has professionals working on it, professional crew, professional, you know, Screen Actors Guild actors, that can be crowdfunded. The numbers just don't add up. So I know a lot of young people who are making shorts or even features that are going to be made for under $100,000, and they're new, you know, it's about young people, and the actors aren't quite in the Screen Actors Guild yet, and the crew are not quite in any of the craft guilds yet. And that's doable once or twice. But if you're going to see something with known actors in it, you know, shot by professional crew people, it's probably going to cost more than you can get, you know, crowdfunding. So what it is, it's a great thing that exists for people who, you know, don't have trust funds, who get to make a movie or two, you know, and get all that practice and, you know, maybe a little bit of a following. But it's not a viable solution if people you're dealing with have to make a living at it.
As for yourself, are you still finding that there are producers, that there are funders for you, that you have a bankable name, people know who you are and your track record?
No, I think I've self-financed the last three movies that I've made. So, you know, I may come up with some combination of subject matter, genre, and actor that somebody wants to finance, but that hasn't happened recently. So I've been basically financing my movies by my bread job, which is writing screenplays and, you know, TV stuff for other people.
Yeah, I know that for a long time you had done a lot of that stuff uncredited.
Well, you know, you get credited or not necessarily based on how much work you do. It's a kind of funny formula. I once said, you know, according to the Writers Guild, in the arbitrations they have, if you make a movie 39% better, you don't get credit. But if you make it 41% worse, you do. You know, it's about how much you change the thing that you rewrite. And quite often, sometimes I don't feel like I've changed enough that I don't even ask for credit. But on other projects, I'm one of the first writers or changing it enough that I do ask for credit. Or, you know, but, you know, the writer's life is that most of the things that you work on don't get made. You know, they get to a certain point and then the people decide, you know, we still don't think this is commercial enough to take a risk on making.
I wanted to ask you, you know, obviously as someone who came out from working with Roger Corman, when you look back on that time, what are the things that you've brought forward from working under him and working on those early films that still benefit you today?
Yeah, well, first of all, it should be fun. I think the kind of great advantage that those filmmakers had is there wasn't a huge, you know, those movies generally didn't even get reviewed. Roger was often in profit as long as you didn't go over budget before the movie even started shooting. So there wasn't that pressure that a young filmmaker gets making a studio film where they're going to, you know, they're going to spend $30 million just advertising it. So even if it's a small movie, it's like an $80 million proposition. That's a huge amount of pressure, and it's going to get reviewed and whatever. So I think it was easier to have fun doing what you were doing and do your best work, but also, you know, have a good time doing it. I think the second thing is just a very strong knowledge, because I got to talk to those directors who were directing these low-budget things I'd written, about what's labor-intensive and what's capital-intensive. What do you actually have to spend money on, and what problems can you just solve with hard work and creativity?
As someone who has a large body of work, what is it for you that still motivates you to want to go out and make films?
Well, first of all, I like it. I love working with the actors and with the crew. There aren't too many other arts that are as collaborative in a positive way when you do it well, where you feel like you have the control over the overview of the story. But, you know, because I write novels as well, and there I do it all. You know, I'm the writer, I'm the editor, I'm the, you know, although I'll work with an editor later, I'm basically supplying everything. On a movie, you've got actors who bring things that you couldn't come up with. You've got production manager, you've got the production designer, you've got the composer, you've got the cinematographer, all these people who have talents that you don't have, who bring you choices. You know, you send them in a certain direction and they come back to you with choices. And as the editor, in my case, you get to choose among those. But they're not things that you could do yourself. So that's a lot of it, is I really enjoy that kind of collaboration. And then there's just still stories that I think I haven't seen up on the big screen that I'd love to be able to tell.
As for Gopher Sisters, how is the distribution and rollout happening this time?
I don't think it's even wide enough to call it a platform release, because we're not opening in that many cities on the same weekend. We open in New York this week. We open in Los Angeles the week after that, and then it opens in Boston. So kind of city by city, I think we'll have hit, maybe 8 or 9 of the major cities before Christmas. And all the so-called quality studio movies will be coming out at that same time to qualify for the Academy Awards. And then after Christmas, we'll be starting to hit, you know, the so-called secondary markets, which in some cases are our best markets. But, it will be primarily in art theaters, although here in New York City, we're playing at the Empire 25 in Times Square, as well as the Village East. So, you know, it's wherever you can get a play date. And nowadays in some cities, there's no such thing as an open run for a non-Hollywood movie. It's, you know, they're calendar houses. So you get, you know, you get the 8 o'clock show for 1 week in Cincinnati or wherever it is, whatever the theater is. And that's it, because they've got somebody coming in after you. I mean, one of the things that's happened with independent filmmaking is that so many movies are made, you know, as well as the movies that come in from other countries, that an art theater, if they're the only one in town, could not only show a different movie every week of the year, they could show a different movie every day of the year. You know, there's that many watchable, pretty good movies that, you know, they could just, okay, Monday you're showing your movie, and then Tuesday we're going to have another one in here, and Wednesday there's going to be yet another one in.
It seems to me like it is maybe this best of times, worst of times, where there is such opportunity, but at the same time it's so hard to get in front of people.
Yeah. I mean, you know, as a writer for hire, one of the things is that the jobs as a writer for features are getting fewer and fewer and harder to get if you're new or if you, you know, haven't had a hit lately. But cable television has blossomed, and a lot of the best work for actors and writers and directors is happening in those long-form cable worlds. They don't pay as much as features used to pay, but you get to do really interesting work there.
And do you see yourself maybe going in that direction as well?
Well, certainly as a writer, I'm starting to write for some of those things. I don't know if those series will get made or not, but more and more of the offers of would you like to because writers have to audition just like, you know, actors do. Would you like to be considered as a writer for this idea of a series that we have? More and more of the work is that, and less of it that's out there is for features.
Would you see yourself maybe developing a series and going that way?
Yeah, sure. If I had an idea of my own and I've been brought in on some of these ideas where if they fly, I would be somebody who would probably write a couple episodes every year and talk to the showrunner, if not be the showrunner, who kind of works with the other writers to, you know, fill out the 10 to 13 episodes of a season and make sure you don't burn your story up too quickly. I wrote a TV series years ago called Shannon's Deal that was on for a couple of years. That was a lot of fun, but that was in the days when there were only three networks and the market share you had to get was so high that, you know, we only lasted 2 years. Nowadays, that show would have run, you know, 4 or 5 years, you know, with the kind of viewership that we had.
Some of the work that you've been writing on the side, what are some of the names of those, if you can say?
Oh, boy, nothing has come out recently. The last credit that I got was on a kind of kids, you know, fantasy movie called The Spiderwick Chronicles. I was working on a series that was based on Anthony Kiedis' memoir, you know, the guy from the Red Hot Chili Peppers for a while. That was at HBO, and that never quite got off the ground. I've been working on one that's about the Budweiser, the Bush family dynasty that's still, you know, maybe alive out there. You know, I a bunch of these things. And as I said, they're, you know, they go to sleep for a while and then they wake up again because there's six more cable outlets and you go around pitching them again. But, you know, I don't know if any of them are going to get made. So, it's hard to say, you know, that they're real, even though you do the work and you get paid.
If anyone's interested in learning more about, Gopher Sisters or where they can find out more about your work, where's the best place to do that?
We have a website, which is www.gophersisters.com.
Sounds good. Well, I thank you for your time.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
No problem.
Bye now.
Cheers.
Es el viento que me manda, que me empuja a la frontera y que borra el camino que detrás desaparece. Me arrastro bajo el cielo y las nubes del invierno. Es el viento que las manda y no hay nadie que las pare. A veces combate despiadado, a veces baile, a veces nada. A veces baile, a veces nada. Hoy cruzo la frontera, bajo el cielo, es el viento que me manda, bajo el cielo de acero, soy el punto anda a las orillas de la suerte. A las orillas de la suerte.